Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for the Law Office of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC, immigration.com. Today is Thursday, May 19th. We are doing this community conference call as a matter of community courtesy and cooperation. This call is being recorded. So if you don't wish your voice to be recorded, either hang up or don't speak up. If you do speak, feel free to use a false name because this call will be publicly available for people to listen to, so you may want to keep your identities confidential. By making this phone call, we have not agreed to represent you, nor have you agreed to be represented by us, so this call does not create an attorney-client relationship. That said, let me get started with the questions that we have. I think I have enough questions that I would not be able to take any new ones, but let's see how far we can get with this. At the end of my answering of all the questions, I will then ask you for any follow-up questions you might have on already posted information, and we'll take it from there. First question is from Mina21. Visitor's visa expired, but I-94 valid. She wanted to know if it's okay for mom to visit when the visa is expiring shortly after entry to U.S. And the answer is yes. Generally speaking, a visa, the stamp on the passport, merely is a permission to enter USA. When you enter USA, you are given an I-94, which governs the permission you have to stay in USA. So if you enter USA even one day before your visa is expiring, the CBP, Customs and Border Protection, at the airport can easily give you 6 months stay, and you're okay to stay even after the visa expires. There are other issues here. If your mom has been coming every year for more than 6 months, there would be a problem. But if she's been coming, you know, less than 6 months every year, it's okay. But the problem is when somebody is visiting for a long period of time every year, CBP could create a problem any year. Okay? So far they have not done so. That's good. But just be prepared for some questioning. The fact that she got a 6 month extension in 2003 should not become an issue now. So I wouldn't worry about it. That said, I don't see. Also, if she stays with a valid I-94 but an expired visa, then reapplies for her visitor visa next year, does she have any risk? I don't think so. So I think she'll be fine. Next question is SWE82, H1 to H4, back to H1. My 6 years on H1 expired Jan 2011. Filed for change of status. I think you've also posted a follow-up question. I will get to that. My change of status is still pending. I've received an RFE. So the university for whom you work have filed an NIW I-140. Which will be pending 365 days in June. Here are my concerns. While the H4 RFE is pending, can I apply for H1 under premium processing? Yes, you can. Can you start working? Once the H1 is approved, you can, if the H1 is approved with a new I-94. Should I apply for the RFE right away? Oh, by the way, the RFE itself did not appear to be a big deal. Let me see. You have a question about the RFE. Where did it go? Okay. Yeah, here it is. The RFE you received was about the immigrant visa that had been filed on your behalf. I think you answered those questions correctly. Since you were the petitioner on the NIW, you have filed it. Maybe it's not correct to say that somebody else has filed it for you, but that's not a major question. That's not a major issue anyway. So what you need to do is send them a copy of your I-140 receipt, and that should take care of it. The I-539 RFE doesn't appear to be a big deal. You can at the same time file for an H-1 premium processing. It looks like this I-539 will get approved, and as it gets approved, after that, the H-1 should also get approved with an I-94. Okay. So that would be the way I would handle it. But respond to the RFE right away. Next question is from Tejal Renu, who says her old employer has sued her and she just wants to settle out of court. You see, the problem is I hate to send people to try to talk to lawyers or even to the old employer themselves. It's a bad idea usually for a non-lawyer to speak with a lawyer to try to arrange terms. I just don't think that would be a very smart thing to do. You may want to talk with your client, and see if the client can intervene and get this case settled. Otherwise, get a lawyer, and you may want to talk with three, four different lawyers. Just say, I want to arrange a out-of-court settlement and see what they suggest and see what kind of money they quote you. Okay? I really cannot comment about how much they are going to charge you because I don't know what kind of issues they are going to face in the settlement, what the lawsuit is all about. But talk with the client, see if they can intervene and get this taken care of. If they cannot, then go ahead and get a local lawyer or even enlist the help of your client to find a good lawyer who is not going to charge you a lot because this matter only involves a settlement. See if that can work, okay? But I would discourage you from doing it yourself. Next question, in need, indeed. This is a very complex situation. Somebody was on a GA1. They had a stroke. They have a waiver application going. And the wife is on a J2. So, bunch of questions. The employer has put them on leave of absence. So, questions are, one, once the current visa employment expires on 19th August 2011, what are his chances of getting a legal extension on medical grounds? There is no extension of a J1 without an offer. And unfortunately, what happens is if you have a problem of waiver required J1 or a J1 with a 212E requirement, you cannot change status within USA usually. So if I remember the regulations correctly, I think you should explore the possibility of a humanitarian parole, although typically a humanitarian parole is given to somebody who's outside USA. But it's worth exploring since the case is so unique. You can even contact your congressman's office and see what kind of help they can give you. Maybe we can get a humanitarian parole for him. Next question is, as per our understanding, once he applies for a waiver, it takes about 2 months to have it approved. It can take longer than that. But the problem is, even if he gets the waiver, he'll still have to go outside USA, get a visa stamping, and come back, like a tourist visa or something. As far as J-1 waiver process, the Department of State contacting the employer and finding out that he's on leave on medical ground, that's not a big deal. I mean, this is a very, very genuine case. Is there any expedited process to get the waiver from USCIS? The waiver is given by State Department first, and then recommendation is sent to USCIS. I would say that involve your congressman's office, and they can expedite it. And this is a very sympathetic case. They can't sponsor his H1. Okay, so again, the problem is getting a waiver, and wife is also subject to the same problem because she's on a J2 and she's subject to the same disqualifications as him, so she can't get an H1 either. Can any organizations help him in terms of health coverage costs? I know that a couple of Telugu associations, I don't know what his background is, they are very active in helping. I think I forget their names. One is out of New Jersey, another one is out of Georgia and Florida area. I can find out the names for you, Ravi. I don't remember off the top of my head. I mean, I work with these guys all the time. They will be able to, I'm sure, raise some money for you folks. You may want to contact me separately. Just send me an email, Ravi, to help@immigration.com, help@immigration.com. copy and paste this whole scenario for me, and let me see what I can do to help you guys out, okay? Let's see if we can find a solution for his immigration problems. Next question is AKM0048, who determines eligibility to file I-485? So I-140 was approved, and in the I-140 it says you're not currently eligible to file adjustment of status. You know, that's standard language. That by itself doesn't mean that you are not eligible to do AOS. It just means that the officer who sent you the I-140 adjudication is using a probably just a template. You know, it is not necessarily the case that you have to worry about. So if your date is current, you should just make sure that they've got the right country of birth for you. Country of citizenship doesn't matter. Your chargeability is according to the country of birth. Okay? So go ahead and, you know, confirm that anyway. But you are definitely eligible. If your priority date is current, you're eligible for the I-485. It's not a problem. Okay? Next question, consultant 007. Question regarding I-140 EB3 appeal and refile pending, I-140 approved recently and pending I-485. In his case, what has happened is I-140 EB3 labor substitution was denied, then an appeal was filed, it's been pending 2 years and 3 months. The priority date is 2003. The lawyer said they just made a mistake. It's a successor in interest situation. He has also refiled another I-140 for the same. It's been pending for 1 year. And 485 is also pending. It's not withdrawn. You're getting EADs and APs. Recently, the company also sponsored me for EB2 where that was approved. So can I connect my I-485 pending to my current EB2? Yes. Yes, you can. Because they have not revoked it. As per my understanding, you should be able to connect it. If they approve EB2 I-140, then why cannot they approve EB3 I-140? Well, I don't know the answer to that question. That's something your lawyer can best advise you. I can take a look at the, if you want to do a consultation with our firm, which I think is unnecessary in this case. Well, we can take a look at the paperwork and give you some better opinion. But based upon what I have seen here, it looks like you should be able to get the case processed in a fairly straightforward manner. My only concern is when the same company has two job offers for the same individual, one lower and one higher, can USCIS not raise the issue? Well, if you are being offered the higher position under EB2, why would you take EB3? So obviously we can revoke the EB3. Normally they don't do that, but something to look at, you know, something to be aware of. So next question is Bob Basic 2002. Job-related travel. Now, he has a branch, our company has a branch office in Mumbai and Sydney, Australia. So he may have to travel quite a bit. Well, you need to look into two things, Bob. You need to look into filing of N-470. Write this down. N as in Nancy, 470. That application is very, very important. If you are eligible for that, your stay outside USA can be counted towards your citizenship period. And second, you must file I-131 for reentry permit. Okay. Now, the question is, what if I apply for permanent residency? Oh, the I-131 protects your green card as far as possible. Can I apply for permanent residency in Australia? In my view, yes. I mean, previously, USCIS has taken the position if you're applying for two permanent residencies, one in USA, you already got it, and you're applying another one, maybe you don't want to stay in USA. I don't think that's the correct interpretation of the law. I would go ahead and do it. I don't think that's a problem. Next question, Imi_IMG. Filed for NIW I-140 on June 15th. 6 years, expired on Jan 2011. People are saying I should have filed 365 days before H1 expired. No, no. Even if there is a gap between H1s, you see, you can now apply for H1. You can apply for H1 6 months ahead of June 15th. But your start date would be June 15th, okay? So you can go ahead and file for H1 extension now. It's no problem. User 567, F1 to H1 to F1 again. I was a student on F1 visa, then got on to OPT, switched to H1, lost my job after 6 months. Can I get OPT? Well, you know, OPT is only given, I think, once you have been on two full semesters of full-time study. So check with your school. I don't think you will get OPT. If I go to my country and reapply for F1 or H1 through the consulate, is there a high chance I'll be rejected? It's very difficult for me to predict that. There are such few predictors of F1 rejection. H1, if you are working for a solid company and, you know, the case is otherwise good, I don't see why H1 should be denied. But definitely H1 visas have become very difficult to get as well. Next question, esoteric, H1 to F1 with approved I-140. Yeah, I know that you have listened through all the conference calls and you want some kind of a solution. I spoke with one of our clients about this particular issue. He's, I think, going to Sloan Kettering discuss this whole problem when you want to go on to F1 and your I-140 is already pending. So I guess you can try revoking the I-140 and hope that you will get the F1 visa or change of status within USA. I am not sure that there is any good answer to your situation. I think what I would want you to try is get the I-140 revoked. Remember, you will lose everything if you do that regarding the green card process. And then apply for H1 to F1 change of status within USA and see if that works out. If you do get change of status, I would advise you not to travel outside USA until you are back on H1, so that, you know, you don't have to worry about a visa stamping. Next question is from Topanka J99, 485 pending baby born abroad. Currently in U.S., wife is in India expecting a baby in August. Congratulations. AOS is pending for both people. Okay. So what are the visa options to return to the U.S. for the baby? Well, one obvious option is for the baby to do following to join. If the baby is born, actually, I think they even consider baby conceived before adjustment of status. I don't remember the law on this, but definitely a B1 visa would be another option. You should talk with the consulate or send them an email. They'll be able to suggest certain things to you. So the newborn can come in, hopefully, on a following to join green card. If not that, a following to join is done where the visa interview is done at the consulate, or a B1 visa. So talk with the consulate. They should be able to advise what is the best way to handle this. If something is not clear, speak with your lawyers, or you can always post again in the conference call. Close friends, F1 out of status, expired passport issues. Well, this guy has some, could have major problems. You said he applied for F1 to M1 and never heard from the USCIS again. Well, that sounds very weird. So first thing to really do is before you make any plans, find out what happened to that F1 to M1. Okay. Once you have that, then you can come back to the community conference and I'll assess what is the best way to go. Because right now I'm concerned about the 3-year, 10-year bar. I mean, it looks like he could be subject to the 10-year bar. So we need to know what exactly happened to the M1 and where that stands. Okay? Find it out for me first. Only then we can explore the rest of the situation. Incorrect information on approved I-140. Your I-140 had only one incorrect section, which was date established. The company was established in 2008, but the attorney put down 2001. I don't think it's that big a deal. They should still go ahead and inform USCIS about the mistake that has been made, but it's not something that's going to be a big deal for your approval. ASHU-4GC. I have an EB3 case with PD of Jan 2005. I-140 is approved, 485 filed. Left the employer. Okay, AC-21 should be filed in every case. Recently, USCIS has started taking the position that if the employer revokes the I-140, you can't even keep the priority date. So I don't want to take any chances in AC-21 cases anyway. You should go ahead and file AC-21 Absolutely no question about it. As to whether, you know, it is twice the payment that you used to get and all those things, let your lawyers assess, you know, whether this is going to be a problem for AC-21. But the explanations that you have given appear to make sense to me. It doesn't appear that this is a major deal issue. But you should file an AC-21, okay? Very, very important in my mind. Next question, I-539 RFE that I already dealt with, citizenship question. Now, here is a problem. Somebody was married to a U.S. citizen but had a baby with somebody outside the marriage. So the question is this going to become a problem? Will this be a denial of citizenship? And the answer is, I don't know. If they consider this to be a big deal, which they can say, well, you know, this was adultery, and that's a, you know, lack of good moral character, that can be a ground for denial of citizenship, although I doubt it that they are going to make an issue of it. And your husband can go with you. I don't see any problem with it. Okay? So I don't think your citizenship should be denied because of this, Tinkerbell, but if they want to, they can certainly make an issue of it. Next question is from Madhan MT, or Madhan. I just learned from June Bilton my priority date is current. Is there anything I should do to expedite my I-485? Don't have a lawyer, find lost. Well, what you can do is no harm in contacting USCIS through the customer service and find out what the status of your I-485 is. A question is, how long does it normally take? Well, it depends. There are so many variables. I would say usually within 6 months you should get something. Some people might get it a lot sooner, especially if their 485 has been pre-adjudicated. So I think you should renew everything. Anyway, don't take a chance with that. Renew the AP and you know, you can, if you're not traveling, don't do the AP at least. Well, do the EADs at least. That would be important for you. But contact the U.S. CIS customer service. We'll see what they suggest as far as your, you know, pending application is concerned. And the last question I have today is, I'm surprised I went through these quite quickly. Last question I had today was Reddy 33, I-140 denied. I came to U.S. in June 2006, got my 3-year H-1B extension in Feb 2011, I-94 valid till 2014. I-140 got denied in April due to degree issues. They are refiling the I-140. I think they should file an appeal. That's very important. So because that gives you continuity of your H-1. I always have this concern about refiling of the I-140. I would first do the appeal and then refile the I-140. I mean, it's a little tricky, but that's the way I would handle it. The question is, how I got my 3-year H-1B extension while my I-140 was pending. Well, that must be a mistake by USCIS. Okay. USCIS does make mistakes all the time. And I worry about those mistakes because if you're not entitled to it, they can turn around and create a problem for you. So discuss that with your lawyers, what they want to do about it. Can I stay until current I-94 expires 2014, even if my refiled I-140 denied? See, if an appeal is pending for the I-140 and the appeal stays pending typically 2.5 years, you can keep getting H-1 extensions on 1-year basis. So I think an appeal is very, very important. Okay. Well, I have answered all the questions that were posted. Now let's do this. Guys, if you have any question on the questions that are already posted, press *5 on your phone. Press *5 on your phone. *5. Okay, I see one person has a question. Press *5. Okay, only one person. Area code 212. Go ahead, please. Once more. Area code 212. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Priya Chandra. And I'm sorry, I joined a little bit late. You may have covered this question already, but my sister sent this question across. It's about my mother's visitor's visa.
Yes, her visa is expiring and she's entering USA, and I said, yeah, that's fine. because even if she enters one day before her visa expires and they give her 6 months to stay here, that's not a problem.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Khanna.
You're welcome, ma'am. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, guys, once again, if you have a question, press star 5. All right, any question, press star 5. I'll be happy to take your questions now. So three people, any question, star 5. All right, let's get started with area code 732. Go ahead, please.
Area code. Hi, Mr. Khanna, this is Esoteric. I had the question about H1 to F1 after approved 140.
Yes, of course.
Okay, so I had three follow-up questions. So my first was I needed some kind of fallback in case my COS application gets rejected so that I could come back and work with my employer. So I was thinking, is it substantial if in my change of status application if I send them a copy of an email that I send my employer saying that I want them to withdraw my 140 instead of actually?
I don't see why not. I would say that, listen, I am keeping the option in case you are going to deny my F1. I want to continue working. But if you approve my F1, I intend to withdraw. I have the employer withdraw the I-140. Here is my email to the employer.
Okay. And the second question I had is, I actually kind of missed the place that you mentioned for somebody you are consulting with who went for stamping somewhere. I didn't get the name.
He hasn't gone for stamping yet. He's just as confused as you are and as I am, because we really don't know what's the safe option. And I've told him the same thing. Try for a change of status first and see if that works out.
Okay. So, and the last question I had was with respect to the processing time for the 539 change of status application. From the documents that I read on the USCIS website, they have changed the filing to a lockbox in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I wasn't able to figure out what the average processing time for the 539 will be.
What this gentleman who was talking to me figured out was 2 to 6 months.
Oh, 2 to 6 months. Okay. So my concern would be that if the change of status comes after my college starts, then I would be...
Actually, you're allowed to start studying. You can't take assistantships, etc., but you're allowed to start studying even with the F1 pending. Double-check that with the school. I think that's the law.
Okay. And the last question. Sir, I wanted to find out if your law firm can help me in reviewing my application, the change of status application, which I'll be sending out to USCIS?
Look, why do you want to waste money on something? I would be happy to, but it's not something that you necessarily need to put money on. What I would suggest is file the application, be truthful about everything, and if there
mm-hmm.
is a follow-up request for evidence that is beyond your capacity to manage, then go ahead and hire us and we'll take care of it for you.
Okay. So, and this is, I just wanted to run the approach that I was planning to take in my cover letter that I'm sending to the USCIS. I just wanted to, the brief point that I'm outlining was that I've always been in status while in the United States for the past 4 years, and that I have ties back in India in terms of family and property back in India.
And in any case, you're a very well-educated person. You've never broken any U.S. laws, nor will you ever break them. If you're asked to leave or the law requires you to leave, you will.
Yes. So that was the kind of approach I was planning to take. So,
well, I think that's good. Why not?
Okay. All right. Thank you so
much.
You
may want to point out a little bit about your history, who you are, and, just give them a flavor of the kind of person you are. Not a bad idea.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Maybe even attach your resume. Not a bad idea.
Great. Thank you so much.
Good luck. Okay. Next is area code 225. Go ahead, please, 225.
Hi, Pankaj. This is Pankaj here.
Hi, Pankaj.
How are you?
Good. What's up?
I just had put a query regarding my baby, and you said there are two options. One is the full.
Yeah,
design.
I actually remember that there's a specific. Give me 1 second. I know that if a green card holder has a child while they're outside USA, there's a particular visa that they give them. Give me 1 second. Let me just get that out.
I actually emailed the Delhi consulate, and they said they replied everything based on I'm a GC holder, so that's not what I am.
Yeah,
right
I
now.
Know. That's what they do. And we've had a situation like this before, and we were able to get a B-1 visa for the child.
B-1? Okay.
B as in boy.
Oh, okay.
Like a visitor visa, B-1, B-2.
Would there be any restriction on the amount of time on B-1 in this case?
See, you can keep extending it. I don't see any problem with that. I mean, this is such a small baby. They're not going to create a problem with the baby.
I hope so. For this topic, there are, like, very few information out there in the web. And so I just emailed the Delhi Council, and they said, you know, based on the condition I'm on GC, that's all their answer.
You know what you can do? Since you're not getting a straight answer from them, just contact your congressman's office.
Okay.
Tell them that I'm having a difficult time getting this information. And even though you are not a green card holder yet, congressmen like to help people who live in their constituency no matter what your status is.
Okay. And so...
Very legitimate request. I don't see any problem with it.
Okay.
And if you don't know how to do it, just go to immigration.com and in the search, put congressman, one word, Congress, C-O-N-G-R-E, I'm doing it right now. S-S-M-A-N. If you put the word congressman and run a search in immigration.com, let's see what pulls up. I'm pretty sure I have a document there that talks about how to contact your congressman. Even the first, if you pull out the first search result, it gives you a link on how to contact your congressman.
Okay. So for B-1 visa for the child, when the parents are on AOS 485, it's a normal B-1
visa. It's a weird situation. See, B-1 can be used for things that are not otherwise mentioned. For example, medical treatment.
Right.
Okay. So we have used it successfully in the past, but it's never a guarantee it's going to work again. It all depends upon the consular officer you get. Recently, when we inquired, they said, oh, no, we'll not issue a B-1 for these purposes. Fortunately, we were able to get other things done for this couple. I mean, they were able to get the green card for the child directly because they were staying in India for a while. So the point is that, you know, we were able to do a following to join for this child. But the idea is that it really is something you need to take up through the congressman's office. That would be the best way to go because they may not be able to give you any straight answers, but the congressman, they have to answer.
Okay, so but the follow to join is only can be applied only if the parents are on GC, right?
No, you can apply the following to join now. Unfortunately, it's right now taking about a year for the following to join to kick in.
Okay.
So therefore, just talk to the congressman's office. Let me know what they say. Okay, it'll be interesting.
Okay,
to
sure. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Okay, the last question of the day is from area code 917. 917, go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Andrew GC with the incorrect information on the I-140.
Yeah, I think it should be corrected, but it's not the end of the world. If it's not corrected, it's not going to cause you harm.
Well, I finally got in touch with my attorney, the company's attorney, this morning. And
right.
What had happened was an RFE was issued on the I-140 before it got approved, asking for the company's tax information and all the ability to pay information.
Right.
So what he told me was when he sent all that information in, he wrote a letter to them rectifying that the date is incorrect, which is why there's no tax data before 2008 because the company was founded in 2008.
Okay, well, I think that should fix it.
So I'm good then? I shouldn't do anything? Or
I won't worry about it.
All right, thank you so much, sir.
Good luck. Okay, two more people have raised their hands. Area code 732, please. 732.
Mr. Khanna, this is Esoteric again. I have a follow-up question on the 140 thing that you just recommended.
What was the I-140 thing I just recommended?
So you said that, you know, I could indicate to the USCIS that I would be telling my employer.
Oh, yes. Okay, got it. You are the F-1 guy.
Yeah, so I wasn't really sure of how I should word the, you know.
You would just say that it is my intention to have the employer withdraw the I-140 because I have, if my F-1 is approved, I will no longer want to work with them. In the meantime, you know, if you approve my F-1, that I-140 would be withdrawn. See attached the email I've already sent to my employer.
Okay. So regarding that attached email, I had a confusion. So should I tell USCIS that I've already asked my employer to withdraw the one?
Yeah, you have done that already, right?
No, I haven't. I'm planning to do that.
Okay. Then you can just say that. Don't even need to attach an email. Just say that you intend to have the employer withdraw the I-140.
Okay. Even though I have an understanding with the employer that they won't.
Oh, they won't as long as you don't get an F-1.
Yes.
Okay. But once you get an F-1, they will withdraw it.
Okay. And will there be a problem if they don't withdraw it even after I get my F-1?
I wouldn't do that because that's a misrepresentation to the government. In that case, I would just stay silent on that point.
Okay. All right. Makes sense.
Yeah. Just make a full case about why this is such a good career opportunity and leads to a different career path for you.
Okay. And does having the 140 affect in any way in getting
it
an OPD once I'm on F-1 visa?
It can.
Okay. Okay. All right.
But withdrawing it may not improve your chances much, but at least makes your case a little better.
Okay. And also, so the advantage of having had an approved 140 was that in the future, if I get an employment, I could have used
the priority. That is correct. Now, the current thinking of USCIS is if the employer revokes the I-140, they won't let you use the priority date.
Okay.
So you lose everything.
Okay. And so typically what my employer says is once you leave the job, they revoke the I-140. If they miss out on revoking it for any circumstance, will that be a liability for me?
No. Only thing is that the I-140 is outstanding. That creates an immigration intent.
Okay.
So, but
right.
That even if you file it and withdraw it, it can be said that the immigrant intent is already exhibited. So I don't know. It may make your case fractionally worse.
Okay. All right.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Good luck. Okay. Two more questions left. Area code 714. Go ahead, please. 714.
Hello, Mr. Kamal.
Haji.
This is about the J-1 that my friend's health status.
Yeah, why don't you send me your email separately and put your phone number?
Okay, I did send your email.
I'll have my office look into some of these things. We'll get back in touch with you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, sir.
No problem. Good luck.
Thank you.
Last question of the day, area code 305. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hello, Mr. Attorney Khanna. This is Vinod. I'm
Vinod, you call me Rajiv. It's the simplest thing. That
Okay, Rajiv. Yeah, I'm calling. I'm asking question number three was mine.
Mm-hmm. What is
that? The question number three was about the H-4. What happens to my H-4 when my H-1 gets approved? It was that.
First of all, unless your H-4 is already approved, they won't give you H-1 within USA. So because the H-4 RFE has already come and it looks like they're already handling it, within the next few weeks, once you respond to the RFE, it should be decided. By that time, your H-1 will be ready to be decided as well. So chances are you will get your H-1 within USA. Once you get the H-1, H-4 is gone.
Okay. So the I-94, what happens to I-94 if the H-1 gets approved?
You will get the I-94 for the H-1. It will overrule the I-94 for the H-4.
Or even if the H-4. Okay, I got it. Yeah.
Okay, they will not give you an H-1 I-94 unless the H-4 is already approved.
Oh, okay.
But by the time the H-1 gets decided, I'm pretty sure H-4 would have been approved.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you, Rajiv.
My pleasure. Bye-bye. Hi, guys. This is all. The time we needed today. Thank you for being here. I will see you again in 2 weeks, I guess. Bye-bye.